Since the dawn of recorded history, humankind has depicted images and told stories of monsters. Inconceivable beings possessing impossible abilities. Things dredged from the nightmares of our primordial ancestors, which have been with us for as long as anyone can remember. Feared and even worshipped, these are things inseparable from our history, and perhaps even ourselves. Things that our minds tell us cannot exist, and yet, both classical scribes and contemporary witnesses will say, yes, they do. We now enter a place where the lines between history and legend become difficult to see, where creatures we don't dare believe in make appearances in the real world, and where our ideas about what exists and what is imagined are put to the test. Welcome to the House of Monsters. Welcome to House of Monsters, a new podcast from the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. My name is Aaron Deese, and this is Volume 1, The Lady of Loch Ness. There may be no more terrifying concept than that of the sea monster. It's an idea which our seafaring forebears held close to their hearts. It speaks to something primal in us, the idea of a powerful being in its element, a place which we can scarcely survive in. After all, if you're being chased by a Bigfoot, werewolf, chupacabra, or the Flatwoods Monster, you at least have the option of running away. The sea monster, or lake monster, or river beast in some cases, does not afford us that luxury. In an environment where the ground beneath our feet extends only as far as the deck of a ship, or small boat, the panic we would feel in any dangerous situation is only amplified. Faced with a tentacled horror or scaly fish monster, the effect would likely be magnitudes greater. The unknowable nature of what large bodies of water conceal must also play a role. The human mind may conjure all sorts of terrifying images when staring at the blue surface of the rolling waves, pondering what must lie in wait beneath. Stories of sea monsters have been with us since the dawn of sail, and one has to wonder, how many of these tales are based in cold, hard fact? The Leviathan is one of the earliest sea monsters to attract the attention of ancient writers. The creature is mentioned throughout the Bible at various points, but makes its most prominent appearance in the Book of Job. Some excerpts from Job chapter 41, beginning at verse 9, state, "Any hope of subduing it is false. The mere sight of it is overpowering. Smoke pours from its nostrils, as from a boiling pot over burning reeds. Its breath sets coals ablaze, and flames dart from its mouth. Nothing on earth is its equal. A creature without fear." It is unknown what creature exactly is being referenced here, but some scholars suggest that the biblical Leviathan is a callback to an older monster, a sea monster referenced in the Ugarthic myth of Baal, a Mesopotamian writing which predates biblical scripture. The Leviathan is one of many sea monsters in ancient myth. In the epic poem Beowulf, the titular hero evades a beast called the Nicoras, thought by many scholars to be inspired by crocodiles or whales. The Cetus of Greek mythology, another whale-like beast, was unleashed upon Ethiopia by Zeus as punishment for the queen's hubris. The ancient Norse people told tales of the Kraken, and European mapmakers depicted dozens of fictional creatures ranging from giant turtles to fire-breathing dragons and all things in between. One sea monster, perhaps the most famous of all, has been a fixture of the folklore of Scotland for 1,500 years. No point in dancing around it. We're talking, of course, about the Loch Ness Monster. The earliest mention of Nessie seems to come from ecclesiastical writings. Circa the year 563, St. Columba visited Scotland and journeyed to the River Ness, which is connected to the loch, on presumably not monster-related business. He encountered a group of locals who were gathered around a man who had, allegedly, been badly injured after an attack by a massive aquatic animal. St. Columba instructed one of the villagers to enter the water, and when he did so, the creature again emerged in pursuit of its second target. St. Columba is purported to have called on the power of God, banishing the creature back beneath the waves. St. Columba would later encounter the creature again, apparently instructing it to tow his boat across the locked surface, after which he set it free. These accounts come from the Vitae Columbae, or The Life of Columba, which was written by a Saint Adomnan sometime in the 6th century. This means that the record of these tales comes from roughly 100 years after the fact, but Saint Adomnan lived in Scotland and would have been familiar with its local history. The veracity of these tales is left to interpretation. It was in 1933, after the construction of a new road which made the lock accessible to tourists, that sightings began to increase. Prior to the construction, the only route to Loch Ness from the outside area was a single, primitive road which had been laid in 1715. Sightings would begin to trickle in even during the road's construction in 1932, and gained global infamy the next year. One sighting in particular would make national headlines, and light the fuse of the rocket that is the world's fascination with Nessie. Mr. and Mrs. Spicer were a couple from London taking a much-needed holiday in Scotland. On July 22nd of 1933, the pair were driving south along the loch, nearing the end of their vacation. By the side of the road, nestled amongst the bushes which lined it, they caught sight of something sticking out over the lane. The object was quite a ways off. Some tellings of the story mention 200 yards, while others go as high as 600. But they got a good enough look at it to be thoroughly shaken. The thing lurched forward, moving across the road in a jerky, slithering fashion, which they likened unto the way a worm moves when above ground. By the time the Spicers reached the creature's location, it had flailed its way into the brush, crutching a dense patch of foliage flat before disappearing into the water. Nessie would make another road crossing 6 months later when a veterinary student named Arthur Grant took to passing by Loch Ness at around 1 a.m. on his motorcycle. He reported that he nearly collided with an enormous animal as it dragged itself across the road, which, after being startled by the sound of the motorcycle, submerged itself and disappeared into the lake. On-land sightings would continue, with at least two more occurring in the 60s and one as recently as 2009. Sightings on land might be a strange place to go looking for a sea monster, but here's why they're significant. There are dozens of Nessie sightings, or alleged ones, which take place in the water. But many of these can be written off to logs, waves, or other naturally occurring phenomena within the loch. Detailed descriptions in the water are less frequent, but these on-land sightings presumably provide the witness with a much clearer look at whatever it is they're seeing. The on-land and in-water sightings, where relevant, overwhelmingly describe a long-necked, flippered creature with gray, sometimes elephant-like skin. Then, of course, there are the more modern sightings. Ian Cameron saw the monster from a distance of 200 to 300 yards in 1965 while fishing for brown trout on the loch's south shore with a friend. He described it as a large, black, whale-like object which surfaced, resubmerged, and then surfaced again a little further off. He immediately called a friend, a man named Willie Fraser, who had seen the beast a year prior, almost to the date. Willie arrived on the scene and both men continued to observe the black object moving about in the water. In the pre-cell phone age, one has to wonder how long this sighting actually was, given that there was time to find a telephone and for the second witness to travel an indeterminate distance to the location. In September of 1990, Val Moffat saw a shape she likened to a capsized boat while traveling by car from the city of Inverness. The object was mottled in greens, browns, and other swampy tones, and Moffat estimated that it was 30 feet in length and rose 10 feet over the surface. She states that she glimpsed it 3 to 4 times while trying to keep her eyes on the road as she made her journey before it disappeared. Upon returning home, she recalls that she felt she needed a strong drink to take the edge off, but having no spirits in the house at the time, settled on a cup of coffee. In 1997, a man named Richard White sighted something on the loch and took several photographs. The pictures show large, gray-brown lumps which seem to be jutting up from the water, and are considered by some to be some of the most compelling photographs captured up until that date. In an interview with the PBS program Nova, he says that he was absolutely gobsmacked by the encounter. The Loch Ness Monster Register, a website which has been in operation for 27 years at time of writing, has an impressive 1,153 sightings in its database. Users are able to report information to the website via email using a standard template, which inquires after the time, date, weather conditions, equipment used, if any, and other minutiae. In an interview in 2016, Gary Campbell, the Register's proprietor, stated that not every submission makes it onto the list, and that sightings are reviewed and filtered before being posted. Despite his stringent criteria, the website continues to accrue additional anecdotal data. Gary had his own sighting in 1996. The presence of hoaxes up and down the shores of the loch are a continuous obstacle to those interested in chasing after Nessie. What is likely the most famous alleged photo of the creature in existence, the well-known surgeon photo, which appeared in the London newspaper The Daily Mail in 1934, was revealed over 30 years later to be a hoax in 1966. Other photos have come and gone, with a few that still defy popular debunking, but as recently as 2021, a drone photo captured over the loch, which showed a distinctly saurian shape lurking just beneath the water, was flagged by members of the cryptozoological community as yet another forgery. A few vigilant web sleuths were even able to identify the exact toy plesiosaur which was superimposed over the image to create the illusion. In 2011, a man named George Edwards, who happened to be the operator of a charter boat which operates on Loch Ness, came forward with a photograph he'd captured of a large object moving through the lake, which was soon heralded as proof of our quarry's existence. In 2013, however, Edwards admitted to a reporter that the photograph was fake. He had actually repurposed a Loch Ness Monster model which had previously been used in the National Geographic Channel documentary, The Truth Behind the Loch Ness Monster. Edwards was unapologetic in admitting to the hoax, saying, "It's keeping things like this going for the last 80 years that has brought hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions, up here. It's what Loch Ness is about. The monster is Loch Ness." All of this has left an indelible impression on pop culture. One popular episode of the seminal animated series The Simpsons features the character Mr. Burns attempting to capture the Loch Ness Monster in a bid to become more popular. Nessie is caught after Mr. Burns drains the loch to suss out her hiding place and is put on display in a scene reminiscent of the climactic finale of King Kong. She ends up working at a casino in Las Vegas at the episode's conclusion. The classic video game Super Mario 64, which was released in 1996 in Japan and 97 in the United States, challenges players to discover a lake in a deep underground cavern in which a blue plesiosaur-like creature named Dory would ferry the player across the water to an otherwise inaccessible platform. There are two possible homages worked into this scene: St. Columba crossing the loch with Nessie's assistance, and the theory that the creature uses submerged caverns for concealment and conveyance. This would not be the only time Nintendo would include not-so-subtle nods to real-world cryptids in their games, but this is a topic for another day. The most recent reference of which I'm aware comes from Oh These Those Stars of Space, an improv comedy TTRPG real-play podcast based around the Lasers and Feelings gaming system, which is also a parody of Star Trek. If that didn't make sense to you, take solace in the fact that you are a lot less nerdy than I am. In the episode, aptly titled The Lake Beast, one of the heroes meets a sentient lake monster with a long neck who calls themselves Goose. Goose mentions that they haven't met a human being in about 1,000 years, and that the people they do meet tend to be rather odd. Upon relaying the encounter to his companions, he is met with disbelief and dismissal. The episode is full of references which would appeal to most cryptozoological enthusiasts, including the throwaway joke, "There's no such thing as a lake beast, and you're a nerd." An animated short produced in Cell Animated, Old Disney style, was released by the Walt Disney Company in 2011, titled The Ballad of Nessie. The 8-minute short tells the story of how Nessie settled into Loch Ness in the first place, taking great artistic and comedic license with the source material. These are great examples of how niche storytelling mediums have seen the inescapable water monster incorporated into their universes. Nessie has also appeared in countless other books, films, video games, podcasts, and nearly any other medium one might care to imagine. But we're not talking about fictional universes. We're talking about the real world. Sightings of a beast that, according to science, shouldn't presently exist. Presumably, a relic species of dinosaur that has somehow survived in modern-day Scotland. Defying logic, sure, but still fitting somewhere within the kingdom of known zoology. How much sense does this make? What we know about plesiosaurs, which Nessie seems to be, is that they belong to a fossil group of long-necked marine reptiles ranging from the Triassic to Cretaceous periods, anywhere from 215 million to 66 million years ago. That's a long time for any creature to hide out undetected, even in a body of water as large as Loch Ness. They ranged in size from roughly 15 feet up to 40 to 45 feet, depending upon the species, and are believed to have preyed on schools of fish by utilizing their long necks, sharp teeth, and snapping jaws. Consistent with what many Nessie witnesses have described, and also in keeping with the creature's bouts with St. Columba and its attack on a wayward villager. They inhabited bodies of water throughout Europe and the Pacific Ocean, placing them at least roughly in the vicinity of Scotland's most famous loch. I spoke with Ken Gerhard, noted cryptozoologist, about this topic a few months ago. Ken is an author, has been featured in dozens of documentaries and television programs, and is also a docent of the San Antonio Zoo. He visited Loch Ness at an early age and also participated in the recent official 2023 Loch Ness Monster Expedition, which took place in April, and I could think of no one better to ask about this long-discussed enigma. He did, after all, literally write the book on the subject, The Essential Guide to the Loch Ness Monster and Other Aquatic Cryptids. The fact that he's a resident of my current home of San Antonio is an added bonus. I asked Ken about his approach not just to this phenomena, but the hunt for cryptids in general.
I'm truly passionate about trying to remain as objective and balanced and pragmatic as possible when pursuing these various types of cryptozoological mysteries. I think that's one of the hardest things to do in the field, getting into any of these fields of the unexplained, is to remain as agnostic as possible, because these are subjects that stimulate all kinds of, feelings and belief systems and hopes and things in most people for various reasons.
I then asked after his own trip to Loch Ness, which I imagine must have been a watershed moment for him.
Yes, well, as you mentioned, my trip to Loch Ness, I was only 15 years old. It was a seminal event in my young life, because it really did inspire me to try to pursue some of these mysteries.
Mm-hmm. It was time to cut to the chase. How does Ken feel about the possibility of this creature existing at all?
This is just based solely on the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I should mention that when I consider the evidence for the Loch Ness Monster, I'm also considering the evidence for similar lake monsters and water denizens around the globe, because I think they're all connected, the same species. So in that light, taking a wide view of the global phenomenon of lake monsters and so-called sea monsters, I'd say I'm about 80 to 90% convinced that they do exist.
I joked that I had, for some time, simply operated under the assumption that Nessie was long dead, perhaps killed during World War II in a bombing run by the Axis powers, an anecdote one is encouraged to seek out at their own leisure. But ever the pragmatist, Ken provided a more scientific explanation.
But there's a lot of compelling evidence that there's some remarkable, undiscovered, very large species, and I feel it must be an Andronomous species that travels from the oceans into freshwater bodies, lakes and rivers, and out again. And that's maybe why they're not seen in lakes and rivers all the time.
While Ken doesn't claim to be an expert on Nessie, it is difficult to think of many other people who might be described with that particular moniker. We've also yet to touch on some of the more exotic explanations for Nessie's continued appearances. In the book Nessie, Exploring the Supernatural Origins of the Loch Ness Monster, author Nick Redfern takes the reader on a deep dive into every realm of speculation imaginable. Is the creature a primordial spirit of some sort? Ancient cults of dragon-worshipping locals seem to think so. Could she be the ghost of an ancient creature, owing her fleeting appearances to some kind of incorporeal nature? Or does she actually slip in and out of rips in the fabric of time to startle unsuspecting tourists and then slip back into the ancient past before being satisfactorily identified? After all, the notorious lake monster has attracted the attention of such lovers of the bizarre as infamous British occultist Aleister Crowley, who lived on Loch Ness for a time. His home, the Bullskin House, was later sold to Jimmy Page, celebrity rock star of Led Zeppelin fame. The home would suffer significant damage from two major fires, first in 2015 and then again in 2019. Efforts to restore and preserve the structure are ongoing. Even in 2023, Nessie continues to enjoy a spot in the headlines. In October of this year, the New York Post reported that a Scottish photographer named John Howie had experienced a run-in with Nessie. His sighting was accompanied by a photograph, which shows a large, grayish object some distance off. It seems to showcase a humped back and elongated neck, and the article describes it as a Nessie-like shape. True to form for most cryptozoological evidence, the photo leaves quite a bit to be imagined. Howie estimated that the object was 12 to 15 feet long. That same month, the day before Howie's sighting, as a matter of fact, a man named Sash Lake would spot a large black object which he compared in size to a double-decker bus. Lake stated that he was confused and in disbelief in the wake of his sighting, which occurred at around midday as fog and rain began to roll in over the lake. This report, in which Lake claims to have been 75 to 100 yards away from the object, did pass the screening process for inclusion in the official Loch Ness Monster Register. Yet another sighting would take place even earlier in 2023 at the end of August by a nurse named Fiona Wade. Wade's sighting also occurred on the water, but she described what she saw as resembling three large humps. A massive lake-wide search for Nessie was undertaken, called the largest hunt for Nessie in over 50 years by its organizers. Participants took to boats and employed drones, sonar devices, and plain old eyes and ears in the search for everyone's favorite water beast. While the hunt may not have yielded a smoking gun of evidence sufficient to prove once and for all that Nessie exists, it does prove that Nessie fever is alive and well in 2023. In fact, even in the last few months, the search for Nessie has found a home amongst a brand new audience of enthusiasts. Sofia Guzman Munoz, the granddaughter of infamous cartel boss Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, would visit Loch Ness in early 2024 on her own search for the notorious lake beast. Gary Campbell of the Loch Ness Register would retire from administration of the website in January of 2024, passing the reins to his daughter, Paige Daly. Daly represents a new generation of cryptozoologists with Nessie in their hearts. At time of writing, the official Loch Ness Monster fan club TikTok page, which Daly runs, has almost 18,000 followers. Wherever you stand on the question of the Loch Ness Monster, what it is, if it exists, if it ever existed, there can be little doubt that we are nowhere near the end of humankind's fascination with the Lady of Loch Ness. As long as we seek after mysteries and hunt after ancient and exotic beasts, it is unlikely that we will stop hearing about Nessie anytime soon. Whether or not she should make another appearance, either breaking the surface of the waves or slithering out on land, is another question entirely. This has been House of Monsters, Volume 1, The Lady of Loch Ness, a presentation of the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. Written, edited, and created by Aaron Deese. Executive producer, Seth Breedlove. Tune in next time for Volume 2, Chasing the Witch Owl.